Welcome to the Recruitment Flex with Serge and Shelly. I'm Serge.
And I'm Shelly. And we talk all things recruitment starting right now.
Bonjour and welcome to the Recruitment Flex. Shelly, in 2024, we've had a ton of great guests and we have another great guest today.
We sure do. And this is someone I have been eagerly awaiting to have a conversation with. I have just admired the company. So big drum roll here. I have the pleasure of introducing Sarah Reynolds, who is the Chief Marketing Officer at HiBop. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Thank you so much. Merci for having me on.
Oh, do you speak French?
I do not, except for the occasional baguette and fromage on my travels.
Yeah, so my French is limited to bonjour and au revoir. So, I know merci as well.
There you go.
Look. So listen, to kick things off for the audience that may not know who's Sarah Reynolds and what is HiBop? Very clever name. If you could talk about those couple of things to get us started.
Sure. So maybe to start with HiBop. HiBop is an HCM technology company. I like to joke that we make HR technology that employees really love to use, as opposed to maybe having to resent having to use in your organization. We are the HCM platform of choice for companies that are part of what we would call the 3M club. So if you are mid-size, meaning you're more than 100 employees and less than 10,000 employees, but you're on that growth journey, if you're modern, meaning you really care about your people, you're very much a people-first company. And oftentimes, if you're multinational or global in your footprint, you're a great fit for HiBop. And hopefully you'll come and say hi to Bob, which is the name of our platform. In terms of me, as you said, I'm Sarah. My pronouns are they and them. And I had the great fortune of not really knowing what I wanted to do when I grew up, but accidentally landing in marketing and accidentally landing in HR technology and determining that I absolutely loved it. So I grew up in the HR technology market. I've had the opportunity of working for some big names here in the Boston, Massachusetts area where I am based. So I spent some time working at Kronos before they were UKG, Salary.com, which does employee data software and compensation analytics. And I have also done some time outside of the HR market to grow my career experience. And while it taught me a lot about marketing, it ultimately taught me that I love HR tech. I talk about HR tech in my free time, especially because I am an openly queer and non-binary CMO. And I think about things like diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, regardless of if I'm a chief marketing officer here or at any other type of company. I knew that I really wanted to get back to the industry that I feel like is my home and the industry that lets me really talk about the topics that I'm so passionate about. I'm so grateful to be at HiBop. I love working at HiBop, and it's an incredible opportunity to get to do things like talk to you folks.
So you know what love about what you just said? We're both coming at you here, Sarah, is how you describe your ideal customer being someone who's modern. That is so important to understand about your ideal customer, because where in the buying decision does HR live? Usually we end up deferring decisions around HCM or HRIS over to legal or finance. And they're not maybe particularly known for coloring outside the lines or even considering themselves modern. Current, yes, but not modern. So I love the use of that word.
I want to know where HiBop came from. Do you have the backstory on how they came with the name HiBop?
Yes, I can share a little bit. Bob was a code name of the platform, even pre having any beautiful HiBop customers. And it was always a discussion about naming the company Bob and the platform is called Bob. They were inspired, you know, in searching even just for a company URL by some other companies in other spaces who had very human, like a very personified name of their product. And they used things like say hi to a person's name, which is also the name of the product, right? We evolved to be HiBop, and we really enjoy the nice interplay between hi and Bob. We love saying things like say hi to Bob. Have you met Bob? As you can see behind me, we really love the sort sort of human aspect that it brings to it. And I'm glad to see other folks in the HR market thinking a little differently about how they name their products and embracing a little bit more of that consumerization of enterprise tech and friendly, human, modern in nature of enterprise tech that we so firmly believe in.
Yeah, you can only have so many companies name job something or career something. So I appreciate the out of the box thinking. I'm curious. So you spent quite a bit of time in the HR tech space and also outside of the HR tech space. And as a marketer, what have you found that's different? Is it very similar? And where is the difference between both?
I think it is that focus on the people that brings me back to HR technology again and again. When you sell into HR, it's different than selling into any other department because the best HR leaders, as you folks know, they're really focused on their people. And they are thinking about how to make their company people first. And they really view people as the center of all of the other business strategies that the other functions think about executing, right? Your business isn't going to run if you don't have the people to execute the change or to drive your innovation or to do any of the wonderful things that you might put on your business plan. So the marketing is much more employee-centric. It's much more people-centric. It's much more human in general. And while we are smart, influential HR leaders is what we like to say, HR at the center of the organization, influencing every other department and influencing outcomes. And of course, we can speak the language of the business and I can tell you about P&L impact of HR technology. It's ultimately also important that we talk about like the real human aspect of what we do, how technology can impact people's lives for good and for evil, and how we can really help make that modern world of work something that truly represents that best sort of people-centric strategy that we want to bring to the table.
Perfect. So Sarah, I want to dig in a little bit deeper of something that we've become quite passionate over the last year, and that is onboarding and pre-boarding an employee. We feel that it's one of the areas that most companies fail. So how can companies leverage technology like HiBob to really give them a kick-ass onboarding experience?
Yeah, technology is an enabler, of course, of this experience, right? So when you sit down with your team and you think about how do we want to introduce folks to our organization, the first thing to recognize is you already introduced them to the organization. You probably already introduced them to your brand, to your values, to your teams, to your ideas, and even your strategy in the recruiting process. So they already come to the table with an idea of what your organization is like. And onboarding is your first opportunity to really make good on the promise that you made in the recruiting cycle about what is true about things like, let's take your company values, for example. So you can explain to someone your company values. You can also leverage technology to introduce folks to your company values. Maybe you have some great interactive programming on what your values are and what they mean. Maybe you want to give some great training or some great onboarding coursework around values in addition to all the other things that they need to know about your company, like how to use systems and processes and how to log in and how to get in touch with their manager or HR, all of those great things that you might include. So I think technology is a great enabler of communication. It's also a great way of thinking about standardizing and ultimately reducing the bias in all of your processes. And onboarding can be one of those. You want to deliver a great first or second or third experience, because that's really what it is, right? It's not really the first, but you want to welcome employees to your organization with a great experience, with a consistent experience that doesn't totally depend on just who their manager is. And you want to introduce them to your organization with an experience that puts your company culture and what you believe first and foremost in their experience of your organization.
I love what you said as far as really this is the first chance for a company to demonstrate all the great things they talked about during the interview process about the culture, all of these elements. So when we talk about onboarding, how should you translate that culture part as part of your onboarding process?
Yeah, so I think you do want to try your best to translate it as part of the onboarding process because it was probably already a discussion, to your point, in the recruiting process. I don't know any of the folks that I've hired recently. I don't know a recruiting process that we would have ever gotten through without talking about company culture. Yeah. Of course, HiBob loves talking about our beautiful company culture, but I think that's true regardless of the organization that you work in. Because to your point, people want to find a culture they feel they can be a culture add to. And as an organization, you want to find someone who's a great culture add for your organization. So it's like a two-way street, right? Now it becomes the, okay, we like to say drink our own Merlot when it comes to what we talk about. So do we drink our own Merlot? Onboarding is a great opportunity for you to do that. And I think it can take many different forms. One is you do want to showcase the people, not just the technology. With HiBob, you can automate your onboarding process and you can assign people tasks and you can assign them things to do or training courses to complete or forms to fill out or IT tickets that get submitted, but that's not enough. You want to make sure that your onboarding process is showcasing your people, not just how good you are at automation. And then to the point about values, I think this is one of those great places where culture can be very tangible. You want to lead with these are our values. And more specifically, what do these values mean for my organization? You probably want to teach somebody about associated behaviors or how these values get repeated in other parts of their employee experience. So once they complete onboarding, it's not that like values disappear or just become pretty words on a poster. It's that values underpin everything that you do. Here's how they show up, or here's how you as a new employee can expect them to show up in one-on-ones with your manager, in interactions that you have with team members or with leaders, in performance reviews, in conversations about promotion, in any of the other parts of the employee lifecycle. Because then I think it really helps to articulate not just that values are important and that our culture is important to us, but also that we do drink our own Merlot when it comes to making this an ongoing conversation in the organization.
Wondering if I could just jump in here. So how does HiBob communicate with the applicant tracking system? How does that work?
Yeah, so we're very partner friendly at HiBob. So if you love your greenhouse or your lever or another applicant tracking system, we want to make it easy to pass the data back and forth. That's a huge part of our integration work and our work in general with our partners, regardless if they're ATS focused or something else. We want you to be able to have some visibility into what happens to the employee after they become an employee. And as we move on our roadmap to something like a hiring solution from HiBob, we really believe that influential HR leaders know that there's a tremendous amount of value in that ATS data and the data that they collect in the recruiting process. And it becomes even more valuable if you can marry it with the data in core HR systems. So imagine if you could tell your recruiters, hey, the places that you source candidates from that 2 years later become high potentials, high performers, enter into our leadership track, actually, it's these channels, not these channels, or these sources, not these sources. That's incredibly powerful information that your recruiting teams can use to spend their limited budgets in making sure that they are promoting and marketing your jobs in the right place, that they are using the right channels, that they're bringing in quality of candidates, right? That matches what your organization really needs, not just in the first 30 days or 60 days or 90 days, but ultimately in the employee's whole life cycle with your organization. Mm-hmm.
Sarah, quick question for you on who do you think should own onboarding? Do you think it's core HR or is it talent acquisition?
That's a really good question. Ours is actually owned by our learning and development function.
Okay.
Because we think that it's a critical learning opportunity. Of course, you're communicating some important information about your company, but really what you're asking the person to do is learn how to become a great corporate citizen. And to your point about culture being a set of information that helps drive behaviors and how we react and how we relate to each other, you know about it from the recruiting process, but we want to teach you what it means to be a great bobber in our case. So we think about it as part of learning and development, which sits in our overall people and culture team. But I know that they have a really strong partnership with the folks on the recruiting side because it is really important to us that we are drinking our own Merlot and that we are really representing the same things pre-hire and with the organization.
Interesting. Let's talk a little bit more here about the whole notion of selecting a human capital management system. What sort of advice do you have for HR leaders when assessing vendors? What would be some tips here?
I love this question. I think I would maybe give two big pieces of advice. One would be, I talk to HR leaders all day long, as I'm sure you folks do as well. And probably one of the things that you've heard come up recently is that it feels like the only constant in the modern world of work is change. And that means that our organizations, our people, and also our technology needs to be able to be agile and flexible and adapt to change as our businesses go through change. We really believe at HiBob that you shouldn't have to call a developer or hire a team of consultants or engineers to be able to change something, whether it's your onboarding process or your performance management process or your compensation management process or how you do your employee surveys or how you set up your job catalog. All of these things are things that we want you to have the flexibility to adjust yourself as an admin. And we want you to have the resources you need from a customer perspective to be able to do those changes or to know who to call on our side for a little bit of help. We want you to be in the driver's seat when it comes to change management, because we think that influential HR leaders, they know what changes are coming, right? They know what they need. They know how technology can help support their businesses through those change. And we don't want them to have to wait or slow down or be a blocker in the organization. The other thing I would encourage folks to think differently about, I talked at the top about consumerization of technology, like it's coming for us. That human element is really important to us when we think about HR technology, especially. But we really believe that HCM should be for everyone. It shouldn't just be a back office tool that HR or HR and IT or HR and legal or HR and finance have access to. It should be something that your employees do really love to use. And we want them to feel like they can use it for so many different things, because we fundamentally believe that the more that employees use the system, the more great, insightful data points you're going to get. And ultimately, when you take that great data that you're collecting throughout the employee life cycle, and you start to think about it with your strategic mindset, that's how you get that great intelligence that allows you to drive influence in your organization. So really, really think about, how do we make technology that employees, they want to use, they want to engage with, it's easy to use, it's intuitive, anyone can do it. And that will help us hopefully collect some more great data as HR practitioners and make even more smart decisions for our organization.
So tell me, how do you believe that HR should prepare when implementing either new technology, especially when you talk about companies of just over 100, and I think up to 750 is kind of that zone where they don't really have anything, or they've hobbled together a bunch of stuff and it's starting to break, right? Especially as the company grows. So is there any advice or tips that you have for HR to prepare?
I think that, at least in talking to our customers, especially those that get to a larger company size with that sort of homegrown solution, or what an old head of corporate strategy of mine would have called substitute goods, like I'm going to use Word documents in Excel instead of compensation management. There's a reason they stuck with that for this long, because they knew even from day one that it was an imperfect solution. I recently met a customer of ours who was 1,400 or 1,500 employees before they bought their first HCM solution. Mm-hmm. The reason they gave, because I found this really fascinating, the reason they gave was, our employees know how to use those tools. And we knew that adoption is a critical blocker of getting the value and getting the return on investment from a big and sometimes quite expensive solution like an HCM platform. And we wanted to make sure that we were going to find a way to get that value. I could talk your ear off about, you know, get your data in order. If you are working in spreadsheets, figure out where they all live and understand where your data lives today and think about how you're going to integrate it into a system that's fundamentally different. Or we could talk about change management. How do you roll it out to your employees? How do you make it a celebration? How do you introduce technology so effectively that folks do want to adopt it?
So I want to move into marketing. Consumers want to buy products from what they feel is authentic companies, but even more, employees want to work for companies that they feel are authentic and are telling a real story. And unfortunately, all the recruitment marketing and all the employment brand messaging that is on websites, it's all the same. What's your take on companies of being really authentic, telling the real story? So how should companies look at their message when it comes to employment brand, and when people go on their websites or career pages? What advice would you have for them there?
it's better to be true and authentic than it is to be perfect. I think about lots of things in the world of HR as being a journey, not a destination. And your company culture is probably one of them. Just like the idea of inclusion is probably one of them. There is no perfect end state of the most inclusive company in the world or the perfect company culture, right? You can't point to it. And it will be different for every company and industry and person who interacts with it. And one person might love your company culture and think it is perfect. And the other person might have a very different experience of it and not love it. I think that's what makes the idea of all of these things like so interesting and fun and challenging to work in. But I would say rather than taking the five things that a consulting firm tells you or your employee surveys say people want, think about the five things that really represent the reality of the organization that you live in. It's kind of like writing your job requisition, right? Everybody wants a passionate CMO. And I don't know any CMO who would show up in an interview process and be like, I'm dispassionate about marketing. Don't love it. That would not work. So thinking about how do you write, whether it's a job ad or like recruitment marketing or even marketing for your company in general, you do sit down and write or pick what are your company values and how are we going to describe them? Like you want things that are true to your company or true and aspirational. You don't want something that's completely different and has no relationship to what folks will authentically experience because you might get the best recruitment marketing in the world, but fundamentally it's going to hurt you in your turnover statistics on the back end.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We want to attract talent, right? But we want to attract a talent that's actually going to enjoy working there. And I think the perfect example is Elon Musk. Many people feel different ways about him, but going to work for him, you know exactly what to expect. It's going to be probably a really shitty culture, but you're going to build something that's amazing. And for a lot of people, that's just not what they want to do. But for some people, that's exactly what they want to do and they don't care. I think you have to be real about what's good and what's not so good. The thing that we've been seeing the last couple of years, what we call influencer marketing and B2B and consumer marketing, it's been a big part of their strategies. But we haven't seen it really in recruitment marketing yet. What's your overall thoughts about leveraging influencer marketing in recruitment marketing?
I have lots of questions about this. And I don't know that I have the answers, but I feel like authenticity is going to be my shtick for this podcast. Yeah. But I fundamentally have questions about employing an influencer to be the voice of your recruitment marketing. Choosing a job is not like choosing your next shade of lipstick or your next water bottle. You are forming a contractual long-term relationship with something that you are going to do for 8 hours a day, 10 hours a day, 40 hours a week, 50, 60, whatever it is, right? You're choosing a partner in a way that's fundamentally different than shopping for something that is more on the consumer side of decision making. And of course, I love that we bring the human element and the person element to how people make decisions in HR, or even how we select technology. But we are buying ultimately for a business as well, yeah, right? It's the same thing with work. Yes, of course, you want to pick something in the moment that feels really good, but ultimately you're buying for yourself. It's so fundamental. It's how you're going to feed your family and pay your rent or your mortgage and make all of the other things that you do with your life possible oftentimes because of that like deep financial relationship that you have with your employer. So then my question becomes, if you use an influencer, if the influencer doesn't work at your company, I have questions about if a candidate believes that's really an authentic voice and an authentic representation of your company, or if they see it as the language on the recruitment website that clearly was written by the same sort of like consultant who pitched it to you. And if you do need to hire an influencer to be that person, what does that say about the reality of your culture that person doesn't actually work there? So I have more questions than answers.
Well, how about taking the approach of creating internal influencers? I think it was Revlon, basically they put all of their employees through personal brand training to build their personal brands, then to leverage those personal brands to do influencer marketing for their company to work, which I think is genius, right? Because it's authentic. It's really growing the people within your organization to grow their own brand. Because all the points you put together as far as how you describe influencer marketing, they all make sense. I don't think it makes any sense for you to hire Jim because he's an influencer in this particular space to come try to advertise some of your job. But I think where it's going is leveraging your internal employees that are actually really happy and giving them the training to have the ability to go out and build their own personal brand. Do you think that's an approach?
I think employees are always going to be your best advocate. It's why referrals, right, are one of your best, most productive recruiting channels. And their network is powerful, right? They're always going to be your best advocate. If you find a way of making that content feel not mass produced and feel like it is really authentic to them, of course. I think we saw maybe about a year ago, there were like two very prominent examples of companies who had tried to do this with their employees where it didn't land. And it was both video-based content. One was like a day in the life of a Big Four consultant, ironically, for this conversation. And one was about being a product manager at a very large technology company. And both of them, the gist of the video, it came across in the wrong way. They were trying to showcase all the perks of like their employees get. But for many people, it felt tone deaf because it felt like, does this person have a real job at your company? So I think that if you can find a way to use your employees, basically to build that influencer marketing or that recruitment marketing muscle, maybe thinking of them less as influencers in the way that we think of like social media darlings or TikTok stars as influencers, but more as influencers of their network, regardless of how big or small that network is, it is going to be a powerful channel for you to tap into.
Yeah, I've seen those two videos. I know exactly which one you mean. There is the other example, though, of Sherwin Williams, the person that was mixing paint on TikTok, which I thought was fantastic. Obviously, Sherwin Williams didn't feel the same about it. But
yeah, and that to me is such a disappointment. A thing I think that people are maybe missing or companies are maybe missing in the social media age is that when you do have something like that, penalizing the employee who has brought so much goodwill to your brand and so much interaction with your brand and so many impressions that as a marketer, I can tell you that would have cost tens or hundreds of millions of dollars for you to get and to have it be so positively received and then to make it controversial. I personally can't understand that as like a marketing choice or as a company choice in the modern world that we live in.
Sarah, I completely agree. I think everyone in talent attraction, our jaws just hit the floor. Did they really let this person go? But it comes back to my favorite word, and I'm going to start using it more, Sarah, is modern thinking. If all you're worried about is risk and what could potentially happen, they just completely miss the mark, right? So
I think the modern world of work is changing. And I think that part of the push and pull, when you are an influential HR leader or an influential TA leader or an influential marketing leader, you are pushing and pulling with some of the folks who wrote those policies to begin with or some of the folks who advise on risk. Part of my job is advising on risk. If you go out and say that, here are the potential risks that could happen. You might still decide to go and say that, but you should be informed. I do think that there is a push and pull, and I think that we will see companies who adopt that sort of modern mindset find a different way of pushing and pulling. That would have been a great opportunity to rebrand that and take that in as a company program and expand it and leverage it and use it in recruitment marketing and talk about, even from an HR case study perspective, why you changed the policy after you discovered that it didn't reflect what was real and true in the modern era. I mean, that would have been really interesting and exciting. Unfortunately, not the path they went down.
It's such a missed opportunity, for sure, for sure. And coming back to what you were just talking about a minute ago, when companies are going on their career page and they're publishing, these are our values, and they may be true, they may be authentic, but certainly my personal irritation is that they're mostly aspirational. They're where they want to be. It's not what it's really like today. And getting approval to publish something, especially if it's a risk-averse organization, they're going to go with what is safe and what is aspirational, but not necessarily true. And that's the challenge. You know, I'd love to be able to point to organizations who went from this to this. They went from an organization that had like the same posters you see in Walmart, right? We are honest. Our workplaces are safe. To here's how they communicated what they really are. Even with HiBob, how is it that you communicate in your values to the outside market and know that's really how we treat each other?
So first, I think the question is, how are your values developed? Are they developed through a large, very safe consulting project, or are they developed in concert with your employees? Ours are developed in concert with our employees. We actually have a cultural committee. And one of the things that we asked them to do was to think about our company values and to advise on what are values that really represent who we are and what we believe in. And the reason I've talked about values so much on this call is we do make them part of every single thing that we do. They are in our recruitment marketing, right? You will be introduced to our values. We will talk about them in onboarding. We will talk about them in one-on-one. We will talk about them in performance reviews. We will talk about them in company all hands. In Bob, we have what we call a value village, which is basically a document on every employee's profile that they have access to any time of the day or night that lists out all our values, and it lists out corresponding behaviors and questions you should be asking about how you show up in HiBob and participate and live those values out loud. I actually knew that I wanted to work at HiBob because when I applied or when I was interviewing for a CMO job, I went to the recruitment website and I used to tell my teams values aren't just pretty words on a slide from HR. And they had something like values aren't just words on a poster. And I was like, oh, it's my people. Like you genuinely believe this. And our values, they're not in little consulting language. They're not like be kind to each other. They're in very HiBob friendly, human-centric language. You know, one of my favorites is bring me, win is we, because it's all about bringing your authentic self to work and collaborating with your peers, right? We interact with transparency and openness. We grow through what we go through. A lot of them rhyme, and I really struggle with this, just speaking them. But I love the idea that we grow through what we go through is one of our company values, because that says to you right up front, we might not be perfect. We might make mistakes, but we're going to learn from it. And that's okay. And that's something that we embrace in the organization. But I think you can see that's a really different tone and a really different development process and a very different way of integrating them in a company culture than paying someone to do it offline, using it a couple of times, or making it that poster in the break room and never approaching it again.
Great example. Thank you, sir. Thank you. That's what I was looking for. Like, how do you communicate it? It is a struggle. It is, because we always fall back on what is safe, and nobody's going to disagree that it's good for business to say that our values include honesty. Okay. That's a good thing to say, but it's just, it doesn't resonate with anyone. So
I think the question is, what does honesty mean to your organization? I worked for a company where the value evolved from something that sounded like that to candid and direct, because what they believed was that honesty was candid and direct feedback about how somebody feels, how something went, what's working, what's not working, every single part of the organization. And that's a very different tone. It's a different approach. Mm-hmm. It is a much more personal or a much more representative and a much more explanatory way of telling someone what you mean when you say something like honesty.
Very good point. Last part, we always like to ask for predictions looking into 2024 and beyond. Do you have anything that you are seeing as maybe a disruptor in HR coming for 2024?
I'm going to cut against the grain maybe of your other recent podcast guests, and I am not going to say AI.
Thank you.
I made it through, I think, this whole podcast without saying AI, and I'm not going to start now. I think you've heard about that. I'm going to give you a different perspective and one that is very personal to me. I think the easy answer for me is the changing landscape of compliance. And compliance isn't necessarily a fun or sexy topic like culture in HR, but it's something that is fundamentally changing, I think, not only the ways that employees experience work, but also the ways that we need to think as human-centric, people-centric HR leaders about the roles that our companies play in protecting and embracing folks of all different ethnicities and identities in our organization. And I think that compliance, in terms of pushing the conversation forward and pushing HR in different directions, is going to come, you know, in many different ways, like in the next year. So I think about, for example, pay and opportunity transparency laws. Lots of folks know about pay transparency laws, especially in the recruiting landscape. Some of them take the form of you can't ask someone what they make now. You have to post a salary range on a job description. Those are great first steps. There are states like New Jersey who are now thinking about how do we make opportunity more transparent in our organization? Mm-hmm. How do we make sure that people know, you know, if there's a promotion that's going to happen or a new position that's open that we want to recruit for? How do we make sure that people know that opportunity is available to them, especially if they're internal to our organization, right? Because we know that, for example, talent and skill is equally distributed throughout our beautiful, diverse, textured world, but opportunity is not. And sometimes knowing who to ask is the gatekeeping that happens in that landscape. So I think that this is a really interesting idea that we should engage with and embrace as HR professionals rather than sometimes what we do, which is dread the compliance activity or gosh, what exactly am I going to do from a systems and technology perspective to keep pace with this? The other one for me is if we think about something like abortion access or the access to gender-affirming healthcare or the access in general to healthcare for folks who are like me, trans or non-binary, I think we need to have a conversation about the role that we play as HR folks and as companies more broadly in protecting our employees who represent marginalized groups, because you can't wait for the law, which in many places is moving away from protections for those folks, to create a safe and welcoming and inclusive and authentic environment where people can really bring me and help you win as we. You miss out on an incredible population of talent if you're not thinking about the marginalized folks in your organization, regardless of what that means to you, mm-hmm. right? Or the underrepresented folks in your organization, regardless of what that means in your city or your state or your location, right? I think it's an incredible opportunity for HR leaders to say, we have a duty to these folks who represent such a skilled, incredible population, and we can do more as companies and organizations to make sure that they feel safe and that they feel protected and that they feel like they belong in our organizations, even when the compliance landscape is going the other way. That's maybe not like the most upbeat of predictions for 2024, but I think it's a really important one because regardless of where you live, you know, state or province or country or city or municipality or whatever it is, or all the different places that you operate, sometimes they can be very different from one another. Sometimes they can have very different perspectives and sometimes they can wildly swing from one legislative session to another.
We have definitely seen that in the U.S. in the past year. It's been an ever-changing moment. So thank you for giving us that because, yes, you are right. We've had AI so many times that it's really refreshing to get a different perspective and a different focus. If anyone wants to get a hold of Sarah Reynolds, what is the best way?
If you want to say hi to me, Sarah, you can find me on LinkedIn at @SarahLizReynolds or on the artist formerly known as Twitter, where I will be tweeting into that good night at Fair Pay Monster, because I really do love pay transparency and pay equity. If you would like to say hi to HiBob, please visit us at HiBob.com. We would love to talk to you about any and all of these topics and, of course, show you all the great things that we're working on to help support your modern people strategy.
Sarah, it was a real pleasure of having you on the podcast. Thank you for coming on. Such great insights. We need to have you again.
Yes, a breath of fresh air. That is so nice to meet you and reserve the right to have you come back and talk some more with us.
I would love that. I could talk your ear off about employer branding and recruitment marketing and building strong relationships with your friends in your marketing department. So I look forward to that conversation.
It's perfect. Thank you for listening. Have a good day.
Bye, friends.
Au revoir.
Shelly, let's face it. Texting candidates is the easiest way to hire quicker today. But your cell phone doesn't connect to your ATS. You're sharing your personal number with strangers. That's pretty scary, right, Shelly? And it's not even legally compliant.
This is where our friends at RecText come in. They've created simple yet powerful text recruiting software that works with your ATS. Plus, it's designed by recruiters for recruiters, so you know it works. To learn more and book a demo, visit www.rectxt.com, mention the Recruitment Flex, and get 10% off annual plans.
Imagine how fast we could solve the world's biggest problems if more SaaS startups would gain traction sooner. Welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. This podcast is dedicated to sharing experiences from B2B SaaS CEOs who are going above and beyond to deliver change that is noticed. You will hear their secrets and learn what is required to build a SaaS business that the world starts talking about and keeps talking about, and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so.